Thank you for standing by. This is the conference operator. Welcome to the Ascott Resources Limited Investor Update conference call. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode and the conference is being recorded. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity for investors and analysts to ask questions. I would now like to turn the conference over to Derek White, President and CEO. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Ascott Resources Update call. I appreciate it has been some time since our last call in January, and a number of investors have had quite a few questions, which I'm hoping to address on this call. Today, I would like to address specifically the following items: an overview of where we've been for the last 16 months since joining the company, our 2019 exploration program, the status of the engineering studies, and our plans to optimize engineering to long-term value, the listing process and moving towards the Toronto Stock Exchange, and the regulatory process for amending our Mines Act permit, and most recently, the benefits agreement with Nisga'a Nation. On the call today with me is Rob McLeod, the former CEO of IDM, Lars Beggenroe, our VP of Exploration, and John Kiernan, our COO. Over the past 16 months since joining the company, the management and I have been focused on driving towards increasing the company's long-term value potential and sustainable long-term value. In order to do that, we've been working on putting the building blocks in place to restarting the mine and expanding the high-grade potential through exploration activities on the property, and focusing on maximizing the potential throughput through our existing mill facility. In that regard, when we joined the company, the fully diluted share position was approximately 169 million shares, and we had no high-grade resources. At the end of April in 2018, we announced the first high-grade resource of approximately 600,000 ounces of gold, of which 60% was inferred and about 40% indicated. Today, after two transactions, we have approximately 230 million shares outstanding with a fully diluted position, and approximately 2.8 million ounces, of which 50% is inferred and 50% is measured and indicated. This represents a 350% increase in the ounces per share that shareholders have today. In addition, we've improved the measured and indicated position to approximately 50% of the resources at a measured and indicated level. A number of investors have asked me over the past months as we've gone through the IDM transaction, why wouldn't we just continue to explore ourselves? Why would we go and do these M&A transactions? And the answer to that question in our drive towards value is the combination of M&A and exploration puts us in the best state for going towards and developing the key cornerstones for mining. And that is high-grade resources that are located in positions that can feed that mill and doing that at an accretive position to our shareholders. And I believe that that has actually happened to a significant level over the past 16 months. Today, in addition, we are blessed with 25,000 hectares of some of the best exploration grounds in the Southern Golden Triangle. When we started in the company, we had a little bit over 6,000. So we've had a four-fold increase in the potential for exploration as we go forward into the future. Turning to 2019 and the pathway forward, I think the first thing that, you know, really that management is focused on is completing some of the exploration work that we talked about last fall. We had identified using geophysics a number of drill anomalies, but that needed some additional work. We need to determine the strike and the dip and making sure that we have an orientation for drilling that maximizes the value for our shareholders. And in that regard, Lars has been involved with the geophysics contractor who will be going on to site shortly and starting to work on putting the additional lines and then following that up by drilling as we go into the second and third quarter of this year. Another thing that's become available to the company, which previously wasn't with the additional ground, is optimizing the expiration targets that we have. And I will hand over to Rob in a minute so that he can comment on it as a geologist and somebody who's been involved in exploration in this part of the world for many, many years. But we have many, many, many different options right now in terms of developing and advancing our high-grade targets. And we need to be careful about not overextending ourselves and making sure we focus on the best opportunities first. We've been merged with IDM for a little bit over 2 weeks now, and certainly been working on where some of the best opportunities for both expanding our resources and developing new targets and exploration is. In terms of the engineering study, we were thinking about at the end of December putting out our PEA level engineering, and then we made the deal with IDM, and we had to start working on optimization of that engineering together with the ability to upgrade the Red Mountain to a feasibility level. As I have been speaking to many shareholders and potential shareholders, both large and small, with a diverse set of interests, it has become very clear to me that our ability to put the mine back into production ultimately depends on our ability to produce a feasibility level study which de-risks the project. And for that, we need to make sure that we have a level of reserves which is appropriate for the engineering requirements for a feasibility study. We plan to basically do this in stages. The first stage is to upgrade the Red Mountain feasibility study back into its current status because it has been stale dated, and doing that under the option analysis, integrate some of the opportunities that we have between Red Mountain and the Premier site. And then secondly, dependent on our ability to convert some of our resources into reserves, to put a feasibility study out at the end of the year on the Premier site, which then would have both sites at a feasibility level at a status which we believe is appropriate for financiers and larger institutional shareholders who may be interested in financing our ability to bring this back into production. In addition to that, we have been focused and in a lot of discussions with the provincial regulators and the Nisga Nation in terms of our process for amending our Mines Act permit. And one of the things that's happened to us over the last 3 or 4 months is completing the best alternative technology for tailings. Although we already have a tailings facility, we do have to go through the process of making sure that we use the best possible technology. And we have come to an agreement with the regulators on that and now are working towards the engineering that's required for submitting our Mines Act amendment application. That is a significant amount of engineering that's required, especially with regards to the tailings and water treatment, and that will be incorporated into the feasibility studies that we are planning to release for people to see. I think on the next item that we'd really like to talk a little bit about is a number of shareholders have asked me, when are we going to be listed on the TSX? And we've certainly approached the Toronto Stock Exchange and asked them a little bit about how that process would work for a developing company like ourselves. In considering that, really the TSX really has two requirements. One is that we have a current technical study, and two, that we have the funding capacity involved that's necessary to finance the recommendations out of that study. And at this point in time, we don't quite have the capacity to do that, and so we're working towards making sure that we have that capacity as we develop the studies, both in hopefully the middle of the summer and then also towards the end of the year. We are aware that there's a lot of interest in us listing on the TSX, and we're certainly keen to do that, but we need to do that at the appropriate time when the company's financial position is appropriate relative to the size and dimensions of bringing the mine back into production. In terms of the regulatory process, and just to comment a little bit on that, one of the things that people may not fully appreciate is when that you have mining and permits and water treatment or EMA permits for water discharge, although that they were granted to the mine in the past, in order to reactivate them to today's standards, we still have to go through an amendment process. And although that may sound quite simple, there actually is a fair amount of engineering work that has to be done. And we have been working on that and made some significant progress. But that will continue for us as we go into the second and third quarter. And then really at the end of the third quarter, we hope to be in a position to submit that application. And that is a high level of engineering confidence on the design of the tailings facility and especially on the water treatment. And then finally, on the process with Nisga Nation, I'm very proud of the fact that we were able to sign and complete the benefits agreement on the Red Mountain project. This is a partnership, and you know, certainly we've been very, very pleased with the Nisga Nation and their ability to respond to our requests. Rob McLeod and the IDM team has done a great job in progressing that, and we hope to continue with a similar cooperation as we go to benefits agreements on the additional site at Premier. At this point, I'd like to hand over to Rob McLeod, who'd like to talk a little bit about both Red Mountain and Premier in terms of exploration potential and how he sees the developments in 2019. Rob, please go ahead.
Yes, and thank you, Derek. It's great to be on the call and to speak to IDM shareholders that are now Ascot shareholders, as well as the existing Ascot people that have backed Derek and his team. And you know, just to reiterate the true synergies between two advanced stage projects, the Big Missouri Trend and Red Mountain. You know, I'm really pleased with Derek and his team of engineers and their zeal to get these economic studies out. You know, we have these internal models. We know that they are they would be very appealing to investors. But to me, it's the exploration upside is still not fully appreciated by the market for these two projects. You know, I'm from Stewart. I'm a student of mining history as well as modern methods. And the historic high grade that was mined at Premier, and as you know, it's really unique for almost any of these major deposits up there, whether it's Eskay Creek or Brucejack, is you truly do get spectacular grade. And, you know, the first decade of mining from 1919 till about 1928-29, you know, it was 2 or 2.5 ounce per ton head grade, about equal gold and equal silver. And I was really pleased to see Lars and his geological team and their innovative approach to target some new areas. You know, most of as well as Red Mountain, most of the exploration that has been done has been in and around either the historic mine or the known resources. To go out and test some new areas, I'm a firm believer, and especially with our more advanced geological understanding of the regional metallogeny, is that in some of these new areas, it could reveal some of these bonanza grades that the Golden Triangle is famous for. So on the geological side, we're going to see two components. We're going to see some exploration drilling, and you know, internally we're going to be ranking these in terms of order of priority, accessibility, how many holes we can get in. So there should be some news coming out on that within the very shortly. But as well, as Derek mentioned, getting these economic studies done, we need to convert over a lot of the inferred resources, primarily Big Missouri Northern Lights, and at Silvercorn. So it's going to be a pretty steady stream of resource conversion news. But additionally, you know, I'm going through the resources with Ascot's team, and there's so many gaps in there where you can add measured and indicated resources quite quickly. So it is going to be a very exciting field season for both addition of measured and indicated resources as well as inferred exploration for new discoveries. And then finally, as part of upcoming economic studies, there will be a resource update from that will actually transition into reserves for Red Mountain. We had a very successful drill program last fall and discovered new one of the highest grade zones actually we've yet seen on the property. And really the synergies between the two, as we get the story out to the market, I think will be much better appreciated. It's a heck of a time to get into this stock. So I'll hand it back over to Derek.
Thank you, Rob. I think for clarity and just to make sure that a lot of the people that are listening, you know, I'm going to go into a little more detail about how we would sort of see 2019 unfolding. I'll start with the engineering studies and then move a little bit over to the drill program for exploration. And, you know, one of the things that we were working on before we did the IDM transaction, and I think people have heard me say this before, our capacity effectively at the mill is around 3,000 tons a day. And, you know, between 2,500 and 3,000 tons a day of the sort of 7 to 8 gram material that we have is what we want to try and feed through that mill. And we were working on that plan, and that was a good plan. But the reality is we only have so much engineering time and capacity, and our job is to maximize the value for the shareholders. And one of the things, I guess, that we felt was quite important was the at IDM, certainly one option that we have to, you know, explore very significantly is the ability to mine some of their ore and process it. And the Mark Zone, which represents a 40-meter wide in places, and I think an average 16 meters wide, 10-gram a ton material, is a very attractive starting area to mine because the return is very, very high. And so what we plan to do now is to take all the work that we've done effectively on our PEA and combine that effectively with upgrading the Red Mountain feasibility study. We had a meeting a week ago with all the engineers, and we have a pretty significant group of people who have a lot of experience working on these things. And I was obviously trying to press them to how quickly we could get that out into the marketplace. But really, I think we're aiming for sometime in midsummer to be able to get that out. And it should give people a pretty good appreciation of what the total picture looks like. And I don't necessarily want to have things piecemeal. I think it's important for people to understand the bigger picture here and the amount of value that the combined entity represents. So that's really our first focus. The second focus for engineering is really in terms of engineering requirements that maybe some investors don't fully appreciate, but without having a Mines Act amendment, we aren't able to actually mine, and we need to do that. And there's a fair bit of engineering work that is related to that, that we're going to need to do. And our target, I guess, in early Q4 is trying to submit that Mines Act application. I think we were hoping to do that earlier, and that has moved out a bit as we've learned more from the regulators what their requirements are. And so, you know, Ryan Weimark, who's come over from IDM, plus a number of the people that we have working with us, are very focused on delivering that at that point in time at a quality level to address the number of issues that need to be important from the regulator's perspective so that we can get back towards mining. And then, you know, finally, we need to infill drill, as Rob said, you know, as we in terms of getting a feasibility study as well as doing exploration, we also need to convert resources into reserves. And generally, through that conversion, we find more resources, and we also tend to upgrade the quality as we infill. The grade tends to go up. And that's an activity that we want to be working on at the same time we're doing the exploration in 2019, especially in the areas of Silvercoin and Big Missouri. Silvercoin represents a pretty good opportunity for us to upgrade quite quickly, and then also especially around the S1 pit in Big Missouri. So by the time we finish 2019, we should have two or three different studies, the Mines Act amendment application in place, plus a number of drill holes on the geophysical targets and other targets that we have throughout the year as the drill season starts for us in May of this year through to roughly the end of October. And people should expect that the news flow will continue. I know a lot of people are unsure about what we're trying to do, but really our focus is ultimately on delivering long-term value. And that long-term value for us represents something that, you know, investors and larger mining companies can put their head around and say, we're comfortable with that. And it is a very tough market, and obviously we've had a lot of pressure on our stock, which clearly I'm not very happy about. But we do see that the focus has to remain on delivering that value. We now have, roughly speaking, 12 million tons or 2.8 million ounces of resources, of which half is M&I, and that gives us the building blocks to having the critical mass that's necessary to put this in place. And there are not, in my view, very many stories in the gold space where you have such high grade, such low capex, and the ability effectively to put a mine with either a very high exploration potential with a free option on a mine, or a very, very good mine with free option on a lot of exploration upside. And, you know, really, things always take longer than I think, and in some of the processes we don't completely control. But I think we have a pretty focused team, and we're pretty clear on what we need to try and do. And so it is not that we are just focusing on engineering and building a mine. We're trying to do both. We undertook to our shareholders to drill some of the anomalies and prioritize some of the exploration for some very, very good targets that were identified from geophysics, and we are going to do that. We want to make sure that we do it properly, and we understand how to orient the drill in the right direction. And so, you know, for us, despite the fact that, you know, we've increased a lot of the building blocks, if you like, and the value of the mine or the potential mine and the size and scale of the exploration properties, the team remains very focused on trying to deliver those things as we go towards the end of the year. I think at one time we were hopeful that we could get away with just potentially doing a PAA and that would be enough engineering that's required. But the number of capital sources that we've been talking to finance the refurbishment of the mill and getting the mine going really have pointed us towards the feasibility study as the route forward. And as we do that, you know, we do believe that we ultimately will be able to list up on the TSX and go onto the main board. Our liquidity has improved a little bit through some of the transactions that we've had, but we see that as a positive thing as we go forward. So with that, you know, I'd like to turn back to the operator and certainly happy to answer any questions that people maybe have. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now begin the question and answer session for investors and analysts. To join the question queue, you may press star then one on your telephone keypad. You'll hear a tone acknowledging your request. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing any keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. We'll pause for a moment as callers join the queue. Our first question comes from Bill Pfaffenberger, a private investor. Please go ahead.
Yes, Derek, I just wanted to ask if there was any update on the possible sale of Swamp Point.
Yeah, certainly happy to update you on that. We started a process with a group based out of New York who had some expertise in gravel, and we have been in discussions with a number of different parties about that. You know, I think... we are remaining optimistic that we will be able to sell that. This is a pretty good-sized mine that is permitted. And, you know, generally speaking, what we see from the construction side of the business is it's a long and slow process. There's a lot of diligence and a lot of questions, but we certainly see an opportunity to do that, and I think we're hopeful that we'll be able to make some progress by the summertime anyways, and we'll just have to see how that goes. But it's certainly well underway, and if people have any questions about the Swamp Point process, I'm more than happy, or Christina can point you in the right direction to Doug Sherrod in New York, who's running that process.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from Andy Allen, a private investor. Please go ahead.
Hello, Derek. Randy Allen here.
Good afternoon.
Quick question. Good afternoon. Little question about... the feasibility study, and I guess I'm confused. At one point at the beginning of the discussion, I thought you said end of the year, and then I heard you say midsummer. So for clarification for me, when is it that we can expect the feasibility study to be forthcoming?
Yeah, and I'll answer this question, and I apologize if I've confused people. So we're actually going to do this in two steps, and everybody in the market has been clamoring for information and wants to see our numbers out there. And right now, what we would like to do by the midsummer is put out a feasibility study update on Red Mountain. And inside, in section 24 of a feasibility study, you have other optional analysis. And we would like to put inside that optional analysis what Red Mountain and Premier look like together. The issue that we have is that Red Mountain will have reserves and Premier will have resources. So there will be a disclaimer on that, but it will show investors what the combined entity looks like on the assumption that Premier's resources would ultimately become reserves. So that's the first step. So step one is to do that by the summer, by midsummer. And I'm obviously trying to push our engineering team to get that done as quickly as possible. You know, and there are some little, say, changes that we have in terms of optimizing that to its maximum value, which are different than what we had in December at the time that we were thinking about doing that for Premier only. The second feasibility study that we would like to put out is by the end of the year or very early Q1, and that would be based on reserves at Premier and reserves at Red Mountain. And so we think that that will be what is necessary ultimately to really get an uptick in value and to attract the kind of funds that are necessary to put this mine back into production. And that's what I hear them asking for, and so we are going to try and deliver that. And what that requires and why that has to wait till that point in time is we have to do the drilling on the resources, especially at Silvercoin and Big Missouri, so that we can put them in a reserve status and that the feasibility will be done not just on resources but on reserves. So hopefully that's clear and that answers your question.
It does in part. The other part of the question is, so during this tandem feasibility preparation period, is there going to be progress made on actually coming up with the things to do lists in order to put the mine back into operation, and will that be moving forward?
Yeah, so, you know, in terms of putting the mine back into operation, there's probably three broad categories that are important. We, although we have a mining and reclamation permit, we have to amend that back into active status. So the Mines Act amendment is one of the things that is necessary to do. And as I said earlier on the call, we'll be working towards trying to do that by the end of the third quarter, early fourth quarter. That's our target. So that has to happen. The second thing that we hope to do is to go through our mill, and not just at a PEA level, but effectively put together ultimately what's called a Class 3 estimate, a capital execution plan, including bringing up electricians, pipers, et cetera, which allows us to put in place a definitive plan for the restoration of the mill. And the third component of that is making sure that we have, at a feasibility level, effectively the mine plan and associated reserves that are necessary for a qualified person to sign off. And that comes through the drilling that we talked about earlier, especially in Silvercoin and Big Missouri. And so the combination of all those three things leads to what's necessary for effectively the execution plan for restarting the mine.
And will those things be happening contemporaneously with the feasibility study?
Correct. They'll all be happening contemporaneously. But clearly, we've been working on the Mines Act amendment for almost 6 months now. And we'll continue to work on that as the regulators define that process with us, and we've been having discussions with them. In terms of the mine planning, that's already been happening and will continue to happen as we develop reserves from resources. And then on the capital execution plan for the plant, we have already, you know, what I would call a capital estimate list at a preliminary level, which is appropriate for a PEA, but really what we're looking for is a capital execution plan with very little risk in it, and we're working with engineering groups right now to effectively put that in place in the time frame that I spoke about.
Okay. Another quick question. I understand what the plans are in terms of Red Mountain, but I was wondering if you could comment just briefly on the strategic synergy with the IDM acquisition.
Well, you know, there's so many different synergies at different levels. So let's start with the capital synergy. And again, you know, really one of the things, so I can speak publicly about it, is that we need that engineering study to back me up. But you can imagine that one of the options that's being considered is the fact that IDM was going to build its own, in its feasibility study, standalone mill and associated infrastructure for mining. That would be mill, tailings dam, power, camp, road, et cetera, and I'm just going to use a ballpark number here, somewhere between $130 and $150 million to do that. Clearly, if you took their ore and processed it at our mill, you would eliminate the construction cost for the mill You would eliminate the construction cost for the power. You would eliminate the construction cost for the tailings dam, and you would be focused on building the road and getting the underground development ready for mining. And clearly for us, that remains a very, very attractive option. Now, at the moment, you know, we're not permitted to necessarily do that, and IDM also has received an EA, or an environmental assessment approval, but it still needs to get a Mines Act approval. So that's certainly one option. The synergy value from a people perspective is, you know, although Rob is going to be helping us at least in the shorter term, Ryan Weimark on sort of what I would call project control and construction control has come and joined us, which is very helpful. And Dave Green, an underground miner that works with IDM who lives in Stewart, you know, we're working on building a team around him. And from a people perspective, you know, I think there's a real synergy of having one group based out of Stewart. I think that's very, very important. And then finally, from an optionality perspective, you know, clearly there's a lot of exploration potential at Red Mountain. We have the ability with the drilling contractor to put a lot of drill holes in their area a long time as we get a road in there. And we see that there's an opportunity to develop probably the premier ground, if you like, in the Southern Golden Triangle, and having also the ability to move tailings around if necessary, because they have an EA for a lined tailings facility, gives us tremendous optionality as we go forward into the future. And I know sometimes it's difficult in the shorter term to see these things, but in my experience and in building a lot of mines, having this optionality, both in terms of capital, in terms of flexibility for operating, and in terms of people, bodes extremely well for long-term value. And, you know, even at a time when the market is pretty tough, this gives us the ability to diversify risk and expand and grow really like no other person in this part of the world.
Great. In terms of the Swamp Point, just another quick question. I know that the permit expires in about 2 years, so is the thought to try to monetize that before the expiration of the permit?
Yeah, I mean, we ideally would like to monetize it in 2019 and ideally by the summer. You know, there's obviously permit extensions that can be put in place, and there's no reason in our view that can't be done. But you know, 2 years from now, I don't really see that as potentially an asset that we would have inside our portfolio.
How about Mount Margaret?
Mount Margaret's probably a more complicated one because, as you are aware, Mount Margaret is a large copper porphyry, and we've had a lot of experience building these. These are really large capital processes, and Mount Margaret has had a group that has been, you know, against the drilling of this, even though the Bureau of Land Management and the U.S. Forest Service have made decisions that there's no environmental damage, at least for the permitting process. And we know and expect, and we're, you know, we see in the news that the Bureau of Land Management and the U.S. Forest Service will can be continued taken to court by that group. So for Mount Margaret, we know this is a really great asset. I think our strategy has been to find the right home for that. We don't necessarily want to sell it, but ideally we'd like to get it inside a copper company that would have the capacity to do the work on that and allow our shareholders to have, you know, equity in that as part of a share transaction that we would do.
Gotcha.
The next question is from John Coachella, a private investor. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there. My question was also about Mount Margaret, and I was wondering whether or not any thought was given to just spinning it out, you know, in the way of a share dividend. But you sort of semi-answered the question.
Yeah, and that depends on a number of different factors. But yes, certainly thought has been given to that idea.
Okay. Is it a more likely than just putting it into another company or?
Well, you know, I mean, the market doesn't give us a lot of value for it, but it's still a great asset. And I don't, you know, there's obviously been a lot of proponents from groups based in Oregon and Washington that are against the project. I think for us, you know, if the right transaction comes along and we preserve the right value for people, we see that happening. Another option for us ultimately is to go and drill the project and continue to increase the resources. But given the capital size of these projects, you know, generally for a small gold company, it's a pretty big undertaking. So I'm not sure about the construction of that inside our company, but certainly, you know, if we see the right transaction come along, we'd consider it carefully.
At this point, is it safe to say that this environmental stonewalling and everything with these people, can it just go on indefinitely, or are your lawyers telling you that?
No, you know, in my view, in my experience, it can't go on indefinitely. You know, people can't just keep bringing lawsuits against the U.S. government, the U.S. Forest Service, and the BLM. I mean, it's a legal process. The court has they have to come up with valid reasons that they haven't been heard before. You know, and they do this with a lot of different projects, and in their minds, you know, they see this as a massive environmental hazard, which certainly the studies did not show. And so it isn't an endless process, but it can be a very long process.
Do you have any sort of an idea of how long it might still be? Because it's been going on for a long time.
I can't give you an answer on that. You know, I'd have to talk to legal counsel, but, I really don't know. You know, we were quite excited about the idea that, you know, after a very, very long period of time, the U.S. Forest Service and the BLM rendered their decisions, but we also knew that, you know, basically that will continue to be challenged.
Okay. Last question. Do you have any sort of an idea based on current market, or is there anything else going on in the market that might give you some idea or indication of what Swan Point might be worth?
Well, the only thing that I can, the only marker that I can really put out there was a gravel mine called Polaris Materials, which was similar size to this, although they had port facilities and they were operating, that sold for approximately $300 million Canadian in November of 2017. And that's the last gravel mine of this size that was sold. Now, they were operating and they had port facilities in San Francisco and Los Angeles, and they were bought out by U.S. Concrete. But that would be the last metric that I would have that has happened in this market.
Pardon me. The next question is from Don Blythe with Paradigm Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Derek. Obviously, IDM had been sort of well down the track in terms of permitting, and Ascot in terms of the Mines Act Amendment. Can you make any sort of general comments on how much you really have to keep these permitting activities separate? I've sort of seen a situation before where essentially you've got to have one message for the regulators and a different message to investors. And when is that more unified that it's truly is a single project with multiple ore sources?
Well, you know, I guess the way I would comment on that is that at the moment, Don, there's a Mines Act process, which is for the Premier site, and there was an environmental assessment process, which was for Red Mountain, and those processes have to continue. It doesn't mean that they exclude options, but at the end of the day, you know, I think the company's plan is to continue with those processes as separate processes. They're slightly different because one is following an EA process and one is an existing permitted mine that needs an amendment. And down the track, if it makes sense, you know, at the right time, you know, and there needs to be amendments, I guess that's something that can be discussed. But for the moment with regulators, I mean, we're carrying out those separate processes and trying to make sure that we advance them as efficiently as possible.
Fair enough.
The next question is from John Simpkin, a private investor. Please go ahead.
Yes, Derek, I'm really alarmed at the erosion in our steady erosion in our values. Since it's a funny thing, I can't help but think you're going in the right direction. But gosh, if we had to raise any money in the markets, we've got more dilution than we had. Is there anything you've said today that you think should have any immediate impact on our value in the markets?
Well, you know, it's always hard when you're in a tough market and, you know, there's a lot of wind blowing against you and everybody's what I would call an armchair quarterback telling you you're not doing the right thing and it's all the wrong thing. And I guess the way that this team has come here and we're doing what we said we were going to do, which is to focus on building long-term value for this company. And today, the shareholders of Ascot are on high-grade, you know, economic ore that we see is attractive to people, are 350% per share up than where they used to be. So we would have thought that would have tried to increase the price. But, you know, there's a lot of people who have different views, and, you know, the company's liquidity has improved, and we've also taken on a lot of new shareholders from the two transactions that we've done. And, you know, maybe those people want to sell. It's really hard for us to get an idea of why people want to sell or why they don't think this is a good opportunity. We certainly created a lot of value for people in the past of executing this strategy, you know, and I would hope that eventually we're going to get through it. You know, I don't know that I have a magic wand to try and, you know, somehow reverse the selling. So we've had short sellers on us. We've had a lot of different things happening in a tough market. And I guess, you know, gold development companies especially have been really hard hit because they are in that stage where, you know, you're trying to do exploration and development. And for a lot of some shareholders, they just want to see exploration, and other shareholders just want to see you get to a feasibility study that shows that, you know, the economics are fair. What I would point shareholders on this call out to is we have three analysts that have recently covered us, from Macquarie and from GMP and from Sprott. At least two of them have some pretty impressive target prices on us based on one of them, you know, from Macquarie, used to work in this area as an engineer. He really knows what he's talking about, and the same for GMP. So, you know, I would hope that investors would take a look at those things and start looking at it and say, look, the long-term value here looks pretty good. You know, we've certainly tried to get our story out there and spend time marketing and explaining to people that we're focused on that. I'm hopeful that some of the high-grade drill results, which we expect to get in starting in May and June and July and August and September, will help to alleviate some of the short-term pressure. We have a lot of news flow coming, but we've remained true to what we said we were going to do in the beginning, and that ultimately, in our view, will prove right, and it'll allow shareholders to see that this is a fantastic opportunity for low capital and high grade. And I know sometimes it's easy to deviate from that, but we really do think that's the right thing to do, and to continue to explore to do that. And so hopefully that slowly that will start to get reflected into the share price. And, you know, it isn't for lack of trying. I can tell you we've been a pretty busy company over the 16 months we've been here, and we really believe the company is in a far better position than it's ever been in and really is poised to go forward. And I don't think these analysts would give the recommendations they did if they didn't believe that. So I'm a little bit at loss for words. And, you know, I can sympathize with a lot of the shareholders. Our job is to get the share price up. And despite this, what we think is creating value, clearly the market is indicating otherwise. And so, you know, we'll just have to see where we go.
Thank you.
The next question is from Bob Frost, a private investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine. Go ahead, Bob.
Okay, you can hear me okay?
Yeah,
I'm just wondering how big is the drill program going to be this year, and what percent is going to be exploration, and what percent is going to be infill?
Well, that's something that we're, you know, trying to plan through. So I'll just talk a little bit about the exploration program, first of all. You know, and the exploration program, and I'm happy to hand over to Lars, who's on this call. But, you know, effectively last year we identified in the fall some targets that we identified with geophysics, which look really good. And, you know, I think what investors have to appreciate is that we could go drill those right now, but we wouldn't orientate the core to the right way. And so we need to do the follow-up geophysics till we understand the dip and the strike, and so we can get the drills perpendicular. But certainly those exploration targets need to be followed up, and we'll try and pick the best ones first. And the timing of, and the amount of meters that we would do, you know, I think we had at least $1.5 million in or more, maybe even closer to $2 million, that was earmarked to do that. A little bit depends on snow, because some of those targets are need to wait for the snow to come down. Right now, we have the road almost cleared all the way to the mill, which gives us the ability to start in on those things. So at least getting those things done would be important. When we move over to the resource infill and exploration, I mean, it's a bit of a combination. So we hope to drill a certain number of meters depending on our availability of money in the silver coin and in the Big Missouri. The issue is with that the Big Missouri area was really originally drilled for an open pit. We've infilled some of it, but as we infill it for reserves, we also expect to expand the resource, which is part effectively lake exploration. So we won't be able to drill the entire Big Missouri, but there's certainly areas around the S1 pit area that we're going after and that we'd like to infill. And we need to work with the QP to really define that. That's something that's sort of a May-June-ish exercise as we start to get into that area. And the same is true in Silvercoin. We only got to drill for about a month in Silvercoin last year, and we expect to have some additional resources as well as just upgrading resources to reserves in that area as well. And, Lars, maybe you want to come on the call and just comment a little more about the exploration program in more detail than I have.
Yeah, of course. So obviously the strategy last year was to sort of establish a geophysical signature over the known mineralization, which worked very well. And then as we were coming like towards the end of the summer, we only were able to put in like essentially like a recce, like a reconnaissance line of IP that, you know, gave us a spectacular number of targets, but like a one line geophysical anomaly is sort of it's a very good indication, but it's really not enough in order to like properly target what you might want to find underneath. So what we're hoping to do is at the lower elevation, so like to the south of Premier, start with a parallel profile there, and you know maybe just take that data of the first profile, do an inversion of both profiles together, and have sort of a pseudo 3D view of the target. And it may very well be that we basically decide, yeah, you know, that looks good enough. That sort of like shows us where the mineralized plane is oriented, which direction it's dipping, and at what angle it's dipping. And then it's really just a question of establishing a drill pad and designing a fan that sort of intersects that plane at different elevations. I mean, in an ideal world where money doesn't really play a role, what I would like to do is I would like, you know, at least have three or four of these targets of the dozen or so that we developed last year. I would like to do like the proper geophysics on it, do the inversion, and then if you picture the mineralization at Premier, we essentially have like a plane that is curved and that dips fairly steeply at surface and then flatter at depth, but we're essentially having a plane that has a depth extent of 200 to 300 meters and a lateral extent of again like several hundred meters. It's quite possible to drill through a plane like that and sort of like not hit it. So we can't just sort of have one drill hole in order to sort of say, oh, let's test this target, and then we drill one hole and oh, it didn't hit it. So when we commit to a target, it'll be a platform where we say, okay, we have one drill fan that drills like directly at the orientation of the plane, and then, you know, maybe we have to sort of like have a second fan that drills at 30 degrees to that, and a third one that drills 30 degrees in the other direction. So I think what I'm trying to say is that these targets are not they're not easy to localize in space, and I would imagine that in order to convince ourselves whether an anomaly really is a mineralized plane, will take on the order of I don't know, 5 to 10 holes. So we're and you know, maybe they call it like 200 to 250 meter per hole, something along those lines. So you're uh-huh. You're looking at anywhere from like 1500 to 2000 meters per target. And yeah, I mean, we're very excited about those things because we're thinking that if we actually establish mineralization outside the known zones, I mean, these areas, by definition, they're completely untouched by mining. So referring back to Rob's comment that early on in the mine life of Premier, they were like mining 2 ounce per ton material. And I think that in these exploration targets, our chances of finding another one of those will be the best areas to do that.
Okay.
That's what it's a summary of the exploration ideas.
Okay, thanks. On the infill drilling, I'm surprised we don't concentrate more on the Premier here because we've got 3 million tons there, but mostly in inferred and indicated. And if we can move that into measured and indicated, we've got 3-year mine life. And when you go back to the...
Yeah, so just to be clear, we basically have 3 million tons pretty well at most of the areas. The difference is that drilling from surface to infill the Premier is much more difficult than doing it at Big Missouri and at Silvercoin. And ideally, really, for doing the proper infill drilling at Premier, we really need to be underground for that. And so where
we
see the easiest ability to convert to reserve is probably more at Silvercoin and certain aspects of Big Missouri. And so it's not that we didn't want to do that. It's just that the holes are deeper there, and you're going to get more deviation. And so it's really more for an underground drill program that we'd like to follow up. We still obviously will try to convert the indicated resources that we have now, or at least some of them, but I think to do that cost effectively, it's probably better from underground.
Oh, okay, because I thought most of the underground workings were near the obscene and Premier zone, and we could drill underground. In fact, I think there was a bunch of underground holes drilled before we took it over, and I hear there were.
Well, there was definitely a lot of underground holes drilled by Westman in the past, and we would look at, you know, going underground and putting some underground drilling in there. But in order to drill a lot of holes quickly in the time frame that we're talking about, that's going to be difficult even from the underground infrastructure that we have now. And so, you know, what we're interested in effectively is we have, roughly speaking, 3 million tons at Premier, 3 million tons at Big Missouri, and 3 million tons at Silvercoin. And really what we're looking for is, in the time frame that we have available to us, is how do we most cost-effectively and quickly upgrade resources, and underground small drilling inside the existing infrastructure would take us much longer.
Okay, because just the grade in the Premier area, when I add back the uncut grams per ton, and assuming 10% were hitting an ounce and over, and there was something like 50 holes over an ounce in 2015 and 16, and the grade jumps to like 15 grams per ton. Like, it's huge, and I know you can't publish that, but it's a real sweet spot, because if you're going to be doing 3,000 tons a day or a million, go ahead.
The answer there is that, you know, you have to remember that for a feasibility study, we have to have a QP sign off on that, and so although that may be very good from an exploration potential, ultimately they're going to top cut everything that you just talked about. And then the other thing is that the average grade of Big Missouri is actually higher than Premier, and the average grade of Silvercoin, I think, is also higher than Premier. And so when you're thinking about reserves for a mining plan, you really, you know, have to focus on tonnage of overall grade. And so you're right, we can have some nice high-grade zones, but overall tonnage right now, Big Missouri and Silvercoin are actually a little bit higher grade than Premier.
Okay. And on the Macquarie report, they said we probably start around 1250 tons per day and then move up to the 2750 and then do Red Mountain a year or two down the road, because that's another 30 million. Is that sort of does that make sense to the way you're thinking?
Yeah,
or
I think
drill program,
you know, what we're working on in this next engineering studies and how we optimize this is that for us, you know, obviously we don't want to do all the capital development that's necessary for all three mining areas all at once. And so you're right, around 1,250 tons, that's roughly 350 or 400 tons out of Silvercoin and out of 400 tons out of Big Missouri and 300 or 400 tons out of Premier. We think that's quite doable, and that's a good way to get started. Then we have two choices. Either we, you know, start the mining over at Red Mountain, and obviously the mark zone is 10 grams and 16 to 40 meters wide, very, very easy mining. And so that's obviously something we want to be very focused on, because that's got a big value to it, doing more development and expanding the three areas that we have. And I honestly would have to tell you that that's part of the optimization studies that we have to do, and we have to do the trade-offs work on that to decide what makes the most sense to optimize the value.
Okay, fair enough. Now, how much time from, so you've got your engineering report, you've got your money in place, how much time before you decide to pull the trigger to actually get the mill up and running?
Well, you know, as we've sort of told the market, for us to finance building the mill, putting all the, you know, power into the new power plant, getting all mine stuff ready, et cetera, you know, we've been running with, and it's not, I don't, you know, it's not for sure, this is just an approximate number, about 50 million U.S. to restart everything over at Premier. And our view is to get that money, and it may not come from the equity market, it may come from a combination of different financing sources. We really need to have that feasibility study in place. And so our view is it's going to take us till the end of the year to get all the drilling and everything done to get that feasibility study in place. And so, you know, I guess we would try to connect to the capital to do that starting effectively in Q1 of 2020. And then from there, you know, we're kind of ready to go. So that's, I think, the goal right now in terms of raising that capital and making sure that we have the necessary money to complete everything that we need to do to get the mine restarted. And although $50 million may seem like a lot of money, if you look at the last mine that was built the similar size to this, which is effectively Brucejack, it cost $800 million Canadian to build. So we're talking about something less than one-tenth of the normal cost.
Oh, yeah, no, I appreciate it. Now, would you, as soon as you're... feasibility study is done, would you start applying for the permits? Because I understand from the McQuarrie report is 9-12 months.
So we would apply for the Mines Act amendment, as I said on the call, at the end of Q3, so sometime in Q4, and that depends on discussions that need to go on with the regulators, but that's kind of our timing. We kind of understand what we need to do right now, and our consultants and all the different engineering groups are ready to go, and they've been working on that. And so, you know, that's sort of the time frame that we have for putting that amendment application into the regulators.
Okay, we have time for just one more question. And the next question is a follow-up from Randy Allen, a private investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, Derek. One last quick question. So if Swamp Point were to sell, would that speed up the timeline in terms of capitalization and everything?
Well, selling Swamp Point would just give us more money to put towards the, you know, and that would be one capital source that we have available for building the mine. But it actually wouldn't speed up the process anymore because the timing for drilling the areas for infill is going to take what it's going to take. It's going to take 2 months in area, so you're, and then another 3 or 4 months on top of that to get it through the QP. And the Mines Act application permit isn't going to go any faster. That's about as fast as we could possibly go. So it will give us more capital for sure, but it won't actually change the timing of the process.
Okay, thank you.
I'd now like to turn the conference back over to Derek White for any closing remarks.
Thank you, operator, and thank you, everybody, for attending the call and asking questions. You know, as more news comes out during the busy season that we're just about to go into, we'll certainly try and make sure that these calls are more frequent. You know, I appreciate there's a lot of long-suffering shareholders, both from the former, I guess, Ascot without IDM and new IDM shareholders and Jaden and Mountain Boy shareholders that have been involved with this. I can only tell you that the team is really dedicated towards getting that long-term value, and this is a rough patch in the market, but we really do believe we have the ingredients to build something very special here, and we're going to continue to work down that path. We have made a significant amount of progress over the last 16 months, and we expect to make a significant amount of progress over the next 9 months to the end of the year. So if there's any other questions or people have, certainly contact Christina or myself, and I'm happy to walk you through them. Thank you again for attending the call.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating, and have a pleasant day.